If your team or you personally are finding working in school stressful or draining, then you'll know how important it is to look after our own mental health as adults, because unless we do that, we can't give the best possible care to the kids that we look after. In this episode of School Behaviour Secrets, you'll walk away with a systematic approach to use in your school to support your staff with their mental health, concrete strategies to use with your team, whether they are in the classroom or part of senior leadership, and some brilliant insights into why some approaches to mental health support do work in school and they fail in others. Welcome to the School Behaviour Secrets podcast. I'm your host, Simon Currigan. My co-host is Emma Shackleton, and we're obsessed with helping teachers, school leaders, parents, and of course students when classroom behaviour gets in the way of success. We're going to share the tried and tested secrets to classroom management, behavioural special needs, whole school strategy, and more, all with the aim of helping your students reach their true potential. Plus, we'll be letting you eavesdrop on our conversations with thought leaders from around the world, so you'll get to hear the latest evidence-based strategies before anyone else. This is the School Behaviour Secrets podcast. Hi there, my name's Simon Currigan, and this brand new episode of School Behaviour Secrets is coming at you at the velocity of truth. Oh yeah!
What are you talking about?
Just trying to sex up the podcast a bit, make it appeal to a bigger demographic, 10x our reach, that kind of thing.
Well, pack it in.
And the voice of reason you just heard there was my co-host, Emma Shackleton. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Simon.
Emma, if you don't mind, I'd like to open the show by asking you a quick question.
Go on then.
When you were still teaching in the classroom, is there anything that made you think about quitting the profession?
Oh, crikey, that's a bit of a hot topic, isn't it? Where do I start? Well, I love the kids, I loved the staff team and most of the parents, but what I really hated was all of the red tape, you know, all of the pointless admin and the stuff that you have to do that you know really isn't making a jot of difference to the children's education. That was the stuff that used to really get me down. Is that the sort of thing you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm completely on the same page. It was all about the admin. I used to love the bit with the kids. And some of the paperwork, I could see the point of that it's part of the job, so fair enough. But the paperwork that was just there to tick a box that didn't actually make a difference to the teaching or learning, and things like marking in 20 different colours. At one point, I was asked to hand in lesson plans to subject coordinators for lessons that were never going to be observed or commented on. Attending meetings that could have been an email, I used to feel like I'm busy enough trying to get everything done without you literally wasting my time on this. Right, rant over.
I'm thinking this might hit a nerve with a lot of our listeners. So why do you ask?
Well, this week we've got Catherine Hume and Sunita Bagri on the show, who are here to talk about what we can do practically to support teachers in school with their mental health. They're going to share their holistic approach to getting structures and systems in place to do this effectively. So this is definitely going to be of interest to you if you're a school leader or a teacher in the classroom.
And of course, one cause of stress for teachers that we see from our work at Beacon School Support when we're visiting schools and working with teachers face to face is having difficulty understanding and supporting the needs of pupils, especially those with behavioural special needs. And that seems to be a group that's growing in number. So that's why we've put together a free download on our website, and we've called it the SEND Behaviour Handbook. And what that does is it helps you to connect the behaviours that you are seeing in class with potential underlying needs, such as ADHD, autism, or trauma.
Yeah, as teachers, it's not for us to try and make a diagnosis, but if we have the right knowledge, we can get the right support agencies involved and get early intervention strategies in place.
And the good news is the handbook is completely free, and it also comes with a set of fact sheets about conditions like PDA and ODD. So we'll put a direct link to where you can get hold of the handbook in the episode description. All you've got to do is open up your podcast app, look at the text that goes with this week's episode, and you'll see the link. Just tap on it and you'll be taken straight to our free download.
And while you've got your podcast app open, don't forget to subscribe to the show so you'll never miss another episode. In fact, subscribing will make you feel so good you think it should be subjected to punitive taxation. Quick and elastic goods joke there for the economists in the room.
Of which we've got none. And now here's Simon's interview with Catherine Hume and Sunita Bagri. I'm really looking forward to this episode, as Simon and I were lucky enough to meet Sunita and Catherine in person at the Inspiring Leadership Conference in Birmingham earlier in the year. And we had a really good chinwag. It was great to meet them and hear about the work that they do in schools.
Today, I'm very excited to welcome, for the first time, two guests to the show. Catherine Hume was a secondary English teacher and assistant head teacher before qualifying as a wellbeing and executive coach and coaching supervisor. She also has vast experience as a primary school governor, receiving an NGA finalist award for outstanding governance. She is also director of Leadership Edge, an organization focused on nurturing the professional development and personal wellbeing of teaching staff. Sunita Bagri has worked as a senior leader, head teacher, and executive principal in a diverse range of schools, including a special school, free school, and a range of multi-academy trusts. She's also a multi-award-winning coach, wellbeing consultant, and a DfE-approved trainer for senior mental health leads. She's also the co-founder of the Teach Well Toolkit, and in 2019, she won the Woman Who Inspires Award. Catherine and Sunita, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Simon. Thank you.
Morning. Thank you.
So today we're going to talk about teachers' mental health. Now, based on your work in schools, how do you assess kind of the state of the nation when it comes to the mental health of teaching staff and school leaders?
Really interesting question, Simon. Thank you for having us on. So very recently, myself and my business partner, both co-founders of Teach Well Toolkit, have actually published a report which addresses the state of the nation. Our report is actually entitled that. So we work predominantly with colleagues in education who are just as passionate about us around promoting and advocating the mental health and wellbeing of staff alongside children, because our philosophy is that both must work in tandem and must work together. We need to really prioritise both. So some of the issues that we use to support our colleagues are very much around, we have to assess the situation. And we can do that by being really active ourselves in education. So being really current, staying abreast of certain issues that are coming up, such as cognitive load theory, the exploratory learning strategies, direct instruction, some school leaders applying and implementing a no excuses behaviour policy, looking at trauma-informed practices, looking at the impact of those things. Like, how do we know that? We're just two single people, aren't we, in education? We take our information from being really active in groups, certainly, you know, on Threads, on LinkedIn. I'm a fellow of the Chartered College of Teaching, so I'm really active amongst colleagues there. It's just about being really, really involved, really active, and talking to colleagues. And I think both Catherine and I are very fortunate in the work that we do, because through coaching and supervision, we work directly with head teachers. So not only do we know what's happening in our local areas, we actually know what's happening across the country as well.
In your research, did you find any sort of general themes about how teachers were feeling or things they were saying about their mental health? Because when you look kind of anecdotally, you talk to teachers or you look at the kind of the figures for recruitment, you see more and more teachers leaving the profession. And when you ask them about why they're leaving, they'll name things like behavior or their mental health or work pressure, not being able to see their families. Did you see any themes coming up in your State of the Nation research?
Not particularly for this report, but if I can reference our working experience, I'm sure Catherine will agree. In my view, certainly, I am going to be a bit controversial and say there's a bit of a blame culture in that it's easier to say our pressures all belong to workload, and that isn't true. I think the work that we do is very much about evaluating all of the contributing factors which impact upon our mental health and our well-being. And yes, workload is one of those. But I think we also know that the DfE are doing a huge amount to support that agenda. So not specifically in my report, but certainly in the work that we do more experientially, I can say that, you know, as you said in the introduction, we work with training senior mental health leads. So we've worked with hundreds of senior mental health leads over the past few years. They are all saying that trying to fire from above to support the mental health of our colleagues is futile. It's a futile effort because systemically there are challenges. And we understand that and we agree with that. It's so much bigger than that. It's so much wider than that, because there are environmental factors, there are personal factors, there are systemic factors, there are, you know, socioeconomic factors. And then we're also dealing with the COVID aftermath as well, aren't we? Which has had huge impact.
So the answer, as always, actually, is it's more complicated than that.
More questions.
And if I just come in there around corroborating Sunita's point there around the lack of sense of control that teachers and leaders and any member of staff in school can feel because we're part of such a big system. And this is public sector work, isn't it? And obviously, independent schools will be part of big systems as well. But there is often that sense of lack of autonomy because you're part of a big system. And that can have detrimental effects on, yes, your mental health and enjoyment of the role and your motivation. And as a result, your well-being. And I was just, when you were talking about research, reminded of some research that was done back in 2008, actually, which was by Maslach. And it identified six causes of burnout. And one of those was workload overload. But there are five others. So as Sunita's addressed there, yes, we should be looking at workload, but there are also the other factors. And I'll just go through those briefly here. One is lack of control, which we've just spoken about briefly. Lack of reward as well. So this might be an external need for, you know, validation, but more so we know that people get the most satisfaction and reward from their direct line manager and their team and their colleagues. So there are things here that we can do internally that we do have influence and control of, which can really impact our staff's well-being. Similarly, lack of community. So how are we actually within our school body? How are we supporting each other and feeling that sense of belonging? The next one is lack of fairness. Noticing what's happening with colleagues, what's happening elsewhere around the school and in other schools. And that can also have a real detrimental effect emotionally and therefore physically if it's left to fester over time. And all of this really comes down to the sixth factor, which is a mismatch of values and feeling that what you're trying to achieve and what you're trying to contribute isn't recognised or isn't also valued by the organisation in which you're working. So there are questions there around, as Cindy said, the environment, your actual school that you're working in, and is there another school which your well-being would flourish more because you're more aligned to their systems and they have a better setup for you to feel rewarded and to feel part of that community so that we can empower people from the inside. So you're not looking outside to feel better. You're doing what you can, both internally as a person and internally as an organisation, to bolster people's well-being.
What is the impact, not just for individual members of staff themselves, but also for the bigger picture, about teachers maybe struggling with their mental health for all of the reasons that you've just described? We just described that it's a complex system of interacting variables. What's the impact of that for the way we run our schools, the way the schools function and the impact on our students when that isn't working and when teachers' mental health isn't where we would hope it would be?
It's a ripple effect, because what we do know from research, even if we look at Education Support, the leading charity for mental health and wellbeing, and we look at the Teacher Wellbeing Index, we also know that the ripple effect comes from burnt out leaders. Thanks, Catherine, for sharing Maslach's burnout index. We use that in our training, and it's really interesting to look at all of those six causes of burnout. We work directly with head teachers so much. We are often working with teachers that are at the brink of burnout. And I think if you think about how exhausted our school leaders are, that are then leading schools, I mean, they're the prime candidates for exhibiting presenteeism. And then that just dominoes into the rest of the staff and the colleagues in school.
Can I just ask you just to explain what presenteeism actually means for people that are coming across the term for the first time?
Of course. So presenteeism is basically turning up to work every day, even though you are not well. And that could be physical, but we're focusing really here on stress, anxiety, depression, other mental health conditions that could be impacting upon your well-being, your levels of vitality and energy, tenacity, all of those things that you bring into work to be able to do a good job. But you're coming into work without those, even though you are well aware that you don't have those. Those are not intact for you to be able to execute your role effectively.
So if you're not in a good place in terms of your health or psychologically, you're not really in a position then to support the teachers that you're working with who might also be struggling with similar issues.
Exactly. I've just come out of a headship and I can honestly say 70% of the workforce were exhibiting presenteeism. And I've worked in many schools, as you mentioned at the beginning. This is a repeating pattern. So what is the impact? It's huge. It's significant. We're looking at recruitment and retention being affected, absenteeism. We're looking at people that are running schools that are stressed themselves. And then if you think about the way that, you know, society is going, and I speak from experience with my own young teenage children now, they are looking for instant gratification. They're looking for reward straight away. So those good old fashioned skills and characteristics, such as perseverance and tolerance and persisting and persevering and showing that level of resilience to do a job, it's just not there. Those areas are not being nurtured enough for us to be able to show strength of character. Some people are choosing to be absent instead of facing some of those things that, you know, we could be growing. And that's where coaching and supervision are beautiful resources to have in your toolkit, because they help you to grow and nurture that development personally and professionally.
I was just going to add as well, we know from neuroscience, don't we, that when somebody is feeling stress, then they will go into fight and flight. Their amygdala, their emotional responses will start kicking in, which we know mainly from when we teach our students. But this is also true for staff, for teachers and for leaders. And when Sunita mentioned about directive leadership, obviously our coaching approach acknowledges that there are very much a time and a place where that is necessary, given the context and the needs in that moment. However, the coaching approach, which is non-directive, not only frees up the leader from having to have all the answers, it actually empowers other people within the school to find the answers, which then cyclically helps the leaders to distribute the leadership across the school. So in terms of the individual members of staff themselves, but also the function of the whole school, it becomes a cultural shift where pressure is released because it is distributed. And I was just thinking about something that one of our head teachers said about using coaching, which was, if we're able to replicate even a fraction of the things that we're initially seeing in those involved in the coaching program, then I expect as an organization that our staff will become less inclined to look to senior leadership to solve issues and instead become much more autonomous, resilient and willing to take risks. And that, I believe, is the basis of a culture where well-being can thrive, because not only do people have that sense of autonomy and purpose, but there's a community there where you can share and communicate what's going on for you and really listen to each other openly rather than just hearing what you want to hear. So I think it's a cultural improvement.
And I think that's massive, isn't it? If you personally, as a teacher, feel empowered and you have choice and autonomy, then you feel like you make a difference. You feel like you turn up and the choices you are making have an impact on the organization as a whole, the school as a whole, but also the kids that you're working with. It enables you to some extent to express your personality. You don't feel just like a cog in a machine that could be replaced by another cog at any time.
Exactly. And this goes back to those causes of burnout. And what you've just described there is rife across all of those causes. You know, people want to be heard. They want to, particularly teachers and people in school, they're in it because they want to contribute. They think they've got something of themselves that could be of benefit to others. And if we deny them that opportunity, then that's going to build up frustration and a lack of purpose. And gosh, I've got all this workload and all these frustrations. And for what? Actually, it's not balancing with the sense of fulfillment that I'm receiving.
I certainly know from my headship experiences that when you apply a authentic, vulnerable leadership approach, which is very much about culture and the premises about building positive relationships, staff will go over and above and beyond their remit of what is on their job description. And it is ultimately all about culture, isn't it, Catherine?
It is. It is. There's a great quote, which I'm going to try and remember, from coaching supervisor called Robin Shewitt, which is something along the lines of, rules are there when love is not. And we can get very heavily process driven, you know, and directing people to do this and do that. Whereas actually, when you build a community and you build it on love and respect and shared values, people want to contribute and will do their very best to do that, but they will also look out for each other. And so their heavily directed leadership isn't as necessary. It's a backup for when things might go wrong rather than the other way around.
So one of my favourite quotes is from Peter Drucker, who said, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast."
Yeah, I love that quote.
So as a school leader listening to this podcast, if it begins with culture, I think that's what we're saying, isn't it? Where do you start? I mean, how do you start developing that culture and having the team that you work with believe in that culture.
It is about adopting a coaching approach. It's about adopting and implementing a style of leadership which is compassionate at the heart. It's about a leader investing their time and energy into developing the individuals in their school community. It's about making a commitment to help those people grow and to help the people grow that are going to help the children grow. It is about being full of energy, passion, determination. It's about having a certain charismatic style. It's about being driven, about getting the best for the children, but not at the cost of caring, at the cost of investing in the people that you work with. It's about helping others to focus on their professional development, promoting that love of lifelong learning, because that's what we want to instill in our children. As adults that are around the children, we've got to promote that. We've got to show that. It's about helping our colleagues to be able to, you know, have goals, be very focused around what is the direction of travel for them in the school, in the job that they're doing. It's about being excellent at communicating as an effective leader, full stop, but certainly as a coaching style, you need to be asking questions all the time of your staff and encouraging them to be curious and to ask questions back, which is completely what Catherine was describing when she was talking about the non-directive approach. That's what we do in the space with our colleagues. It's about giving them the time, giving them the space, not giving them the answers, but actually giving them the opportunity to be able to think, reflect, evaluate. It's about being humble. It's about, not necessarily having all the answers, but about asking and showing that vulnerable side of yourself. Catherine, what do you think?
Absolutely. And I was just thinking about that vulnerability there, because if we're asking our members of staff and our colleagues to be vulnerable with us, particularly if it's a cultural shift and it's not something that's happened up to now, really we're looking at building trust. And that, you know, in answer to your question on what do you do, build trust. Well, that's not step one, is it? Because how do you go about building trust? And I always think of Brené Brown's example of the jar of marbles, and that every comment, every facial expression, every opportunity that you have is like a marble going in a jar, and it builds up until eventually you've succeeded in establishing trust. But one look, one comment, one initiative, you knock it over and you're starting again from scratch. So really, I think the leader themselves or the leadership team have to be able to put themselves in a vulnerable position through, I would suggest, of course, having a coach, because then they are not asking of their staff anything that they're not willing to do themselves. And that's one example of how you build trust, is by showing that this isn't a done-to thing. This is actually something that's benefiting all of us. And I'm a lifelong learner too. I make mistakes too. I need someone to talk to as well. I've got my own questions that I'm asking of myself and my leadership style and my leadership team. And we ask those questions of each other as a leadership team. And by starting that way, other members of staff and colleagues will start to see, okay, this is safe. We've got permission to have these conversations and to behave in this way.
Absolutely. The key is you can't adopt or implement a coaching style unless you really understand coaching yourself. And I think the space for coaching for school leaders ensures that they're being very introspective, that they are very, very acutely self-aware of themselves as leaders. It's critical actually to their own development and giving them time to be able to self-evaluate and process what's going on, so that they can then filter and cascade, which is a word I know we're really passionate about using when we work through Leadership Edge, about cascading and empowering and really just disseminating that style across. It doesn't work unless the leader themselves is committed to having coaching themselves.
I think what you're saying, if I've heard it correctly, and it sounds intuitively the right approach to me, is in the past, I think there's been a danger that we've had like a mental health morning on an inset day. Everyone turns up. There's an inverted commas initiative where we sit down and talk about something. And then all that information, all that talk just seems to go nowhere and fizzles out. It's not a one and done, is it? What you're talking about is input over time. It's proper coaching, investing in the long term.
This is mindset. It's mindset. And it's relationships which develop over time. And beyond that, it's being very aware of people's differences. And yes, suggesting an initiative or a time that people need to go home by or a food that's going to be brought in on a Friday. These are not respecting people's individuality, their own circumstances at home, their own sense of what well-being is to them. And we're all different. Creating a culture and an environment where people are allowed to express those differences and feel safe to do so. You hear a lot in the social media and CPD at the moment about psychological safety. And that's part of this conversation. Because when you're looking at how can we protect or nurture mental health in our staff, we need to be really clear here that we're not, as a staff body or as a coach, going to be diagnosing anybody with any mental health diagnoses. And we would help them to find specialist support to do that. What we're looking at is an ongoing healthiness within their mind and within the internal dialogue that they're experiencing. So if they feel that is potentially at risk, they know that they've got support around them to process that and to work out their next steps.
That sounds great. Setting up the culture, putting in place an ongoing coaching program to support the mental well-being of our team. But I can imagine that there are some leaders listening to this right now saying, I have got so much on my plate right now. What would you say to someone, you know, a school leader listening to this and saying, yeah, I just don't have the additional time. I'm already overloaded with work as it is.
Exactly. You have too much to do. So let us help you create a culture which changes that for you. Because the program that we have at Leadership Edge is absolutely about cascading the skills amongst your workforce so that they provide that space for each other. So it's not about you delivering anything, although having the senior leader and the head teacher embarking on this journey, this learning journey and experience first is ideal. We have schools who've worked with us where we've had a part-time MFL teacher starting it, trialing it, and then feeding back to the school, to the head teacher and saying, yeah, this is worthwhile. And now I'm going to start coaching a couple of people myself. So this is the participant. They then cascade it internally themselves. So you're not paying us to do that, because this is about making it sustainable, both time-wise and cost-wise for schools. You know, we're, Sunita and I and everyone on the Leadership Edge team have all got school leadership background. We want to support you. That's what we're in it for. So it's not time consuming. We're currently putting a compilation together of people saying that to us, our participants who've gone through the program saying, just give yourselves 45 minutes a half term and you will find that you have a clarity of thinking, that you have parked any issues that are just not actually going to support you moving forwards, and that you know who you're going to speak to, what you're going to speak to them about, what your end goal is, what you're trying to get out of it. And that clarity of purpose and realignment to what matters to you then drives people forward. So it all becomes this phrase, non-directive. So in terms of the senior leader and the head teacher saying, I don't have the time or the energy to invest in this, we get that. But you have to start, because otherwise what's going to change? So we want to help you make that change.
I want to just come in there and put two quotes together, two of my favourite quotes, because we hear that all the time, Simon. And I can only say from my own experience of having the mental health and wellbeing background, having the coaching passion and knowledge and training, and then being a school head teacher, you know, I've got lived experience. And it's with the benefit of knowing the difference that coaching makes, that no matter how time poor I have been as a school leader, I will always, always, always make time for coaching and supervision. Because my two favourite quotes is, I know that I need to get off the dance floor, stand on the balcony. And I know when I do that, that when I slow down, I go faster. And that is probably my favourite quote, because it's so true. When I slow down, I go faster.
I had just this week a coaching session, which I thought, oh, I don't have time for this. I've got so many things I need to do. And then, you know, that coaching session just allowed me, as Sunita, to slow down and to get a different perspective and actually look at myself doing and thinking, is that who I want to be? Is that the life I'm choosing for myself? The behaviours that I'm choosing for myself? The perception that other people are going to have of me? Is that who I want to be? And so you take stock. You know, I came out of that coaching session, as I do, and as I'm sure anyone who has coaching does, feeling more in control, less like things are being done to me and that I have to get these things done, and more, I am choosing to do this and I'm choosing not to do that. And the impact on me this week, just from that coaching session on Monday, has made me calmer, more present for my family, more present for my clients in work, and just generally happier.
Can you give us a specific example of a success story you've had using this approach?
Our first school that we started working with was a 3-4 entry primary in Wolverhampton called East Park. That was actually where the whole Leadership Edge journey started. Jan was a coach for Hayley, who is the head teacher. And the school went when Hayley brought Ofsted in the January after she'd started in the September because she wanted to get the judgment that she thought the school should get, which put the school into special measures. And then they began their journey of cultural change. So they started coaching their senior leadership team and then cascaded that through this accredited process to allow all members of staff to receive this time and to receive this mind, this headspace and empowering approach to start making real changes in the school. So the leadership team were able to focus on the strategy. The middle leaders were able to focus on the operations and the things that they wanted to change in terms of the teaching. 3 years later, the school was outstanding in all areas and the DfE top 100 schools. And obviously the pupils' results reflected that. So yeah, there's very tangible evidence of this approach working. It isn't a quick fix. It's not something that you're going to start in September and by December you're going to have new outcomes and so on. It's over time, but it's an investment in building a community and building practices and communication styles which bring everybody on board so they can do their best in their roles. As we've said before, it's disseminated across. So that's one example. And then we've got numerous examples of individuals in schools who are working perhaps in the same school or across different schools where, you know, the differences that they've seen in terms of improving their mental health might be their work-life balance has improved, such as they're spending more time with their own children or on hobbies or their physical fitness. They're improving their stress management strategies. You know, they're able to prioritize better and delegate better. They've got better working relationships with each other. Big one is about managing their self-talk. So that imposter syndrome or self-criticism diminishes, and just making career decisions with more clarity. So rather than taking a promotion because everybody's telling them they ought to and they'd be really good at that role, they're actually thinking about that more clearly and thinking, well, what works for me? What's going to make me happiest and most effective at work? And just as we said before, managing those frustrations about those things that are going to be frustrating in any organisation, but doing it in a way that you don't collude with other members of staff and become critical about it in the corner of the staff room. You address it openly and therefore things change for the positive.
Can I just share an example of working with a head teacher myself and the feedback that she's given me in terms of impact that coaching has had for her? She reported that the trusting relationships that she has developed with the staff, but particularly with her SLT, has led her to really gaining a strong sense of safety and security in her role as a leader. She has felt that all of the SLT report that she boosts their morale as a leader now. She feels that the priorities in the school that have been on their school development plan for the past couple of years are starting to lead to sustainable change, and change that, because it's been delegated effectively by her, but ultimately because it's been understood and the SLT feel so autonomous over the areas of responsibility, that the changes have been quick, they've been rapid. They are now coming back to her at SLT meetings and asking for constructive feedback of her. So different to what she was used to in a previous experience. So for her, she's used the word transformational. It's been a transformational experience for her to have coaching and then to apply that model. She feels that everybody's working really collaboratively. There's a very supportive working environment and culture. The whole well-being and coaching is integral to the school development plan. It's right there from governance level. Everybody understands it. It's budgeted for from the school because the governors are committed to the process. Effectively, the head said it was giving her a really good understanding of the SLT's leadership style because of the profiling that she had done as well. So even for her to be able to communicate with her leaders, she knows that for some, a conversation is great and they will get it after a conversation. But for others, she knows that she needs to delegate and then follow up through emails and they know that that's the preferred kind of style. So really understanding at that practical level of how to communicate with her leaders has been really empowering for her.
I was speaking to a head teacher recently who, I'll quote what she said actually, "I'm in the process of reevaluating the entire performance management cycle in school. I want something intrinsically linked to staff, mental health and well-being. And I totally believe that coaching is the approach that we need to be using. It's a done with and not a done to."
The final thing I was going to say on that was around, we know that workload and pressure on our colleagues comes from lesson observations and monitoring. And again, this head has flipped that as well. Well, we've worked really closely together on this, but now it's very much about lesson studies and triads and asking questions of reflection, not giving feedback as you would expect, but very much about how can I improve what has gone well. Again, trying to help an introspective approach to develop.
What we've talked about today is big. We've talked about culture, non-directive coaching, leaders being better at asking questions rather than giving answers. Big, 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 big stuff. If you're a teacher or a school leader listening to this podcast episode today, what's just the first step you think they should be taking today to either take more effective care of their staff or even their own mental health or the mental health of the people that they work with?
Genuinely, I would say to have a self audit of how they're going to manage stress, because it is inevitable. We all deal with stress, and stress can be really productive and really impactful when it's just at the right level to help us perform at our optimum level. But when that pressure performance curve tips the other way, we also know that our performance will decline, can decline very quickly unless we recognise those very early warning signs. So my advice to anybody in education is very much always going to be focused around be prepared to be stressed, because you will meet stress. And when you find yourself in a stressful situation, what are your early warning signs? What are the triggers? And how are you going to respond to those? So I would always encourage everyone in a school to have a wellness action plan in place.
Catherine, what would your advice be? Would that be the same?
Experience coaching. Simon, experience coaching. Because yes, you're right. We're talking about this. And for somebody who hasn't experienced coaching, it might seem a bit airy-fairy and not grounded. Sunita and I are so passionate about this because we've experienced it firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand over a number of years, the impact that it makes. And it seems so simple that it's almost like it can't be that powerful, but it really is, because we are human beings and we need time to internally process what is going on for us. We know this with our students. We need it for our adults as well. So experience coaching, experience what it's like to have a space where somebody really, really listens and cares about what is going on for you. And the impact of that, if you experience it as a leader, you will recognize its value and you will recognize that actually a way forward could be to expand this and allow other members of staff to feel valued in that way. And it can really, really switch things around, as we saw at East Park. So get a coach.
How can our listeners find out more about you, your approach, your resources? Where should they go?
Yeah, for us, it would be on leadershipedge.org.uk. Our website there has some of our free tools. It's got a free coaching quiz to get going where you can just answer a few questions. It's about 2 minutes to do, and then you get a report back about asking you the sort of things that maybe you would want to bring to a coaching session. And of course, it's got testimonials on there from people who we've worked with and details of all our services and who we are and our mission to support schools in this really important work.
And for myself, you'd be looking at going on to the website teachwelltoolkit.com. I'm co-founder of Teachwell Toolkit alongside my business partner Steve Waters, who has published recently a book called Cultures of Staff Well Being and Mental Health in Schools, which really is my go-to book because it shows impact of where 32 schools have talked about the culture of well-being in their schools. And it's those case studies that we use in our senior mental health lead training, because we know it's tried and tested and worked effectively to be able to support our colleagues. So please give us a visit. There's lots of free downloads. We're very passionate about helping colleagues. So please get to know our website and contact us if we can do anything to support yourselves individually or at whole school level.
Perfect. I'll put direct links to those in the show notes as well for anyone that wants to click through easily. And finally, we ask this of all our guests. Who is the key figure that's influenced you, or what is the key book that you've read that's had the biggest impact on your approach to working with children?
For me, it's a book called Teaching That Changes Lives. It gives 12 mindset tools for igniting the love of learning, and it's by Marilee Adams.
Ken Robinson, The Element, the late great Ken Robinson, who really fought for children to be within an education system which allowed their individual talents to be nurtured through personalising, listening and seeing the internal genius of those children in a system that may not have originally or typically allowed that to flourish. And I just believe the same should be true of our adults in schools as well.
Sunita and Catherine, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you for being on the show. I've really enjoyed it. I feel like we went into quite some depth there. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for giving us the time to enjoy the conversation too.
You know, I really like that approach to supporting, coaching and mentoring schools to achieve long-term success. And I think it fits in really well with our ethos and the way that we support educators too.
Completely agree. And if you want to find out more about Catherine and Sunita's websites and the work they do in schools, you'll find I put direct links in the episode description. All you have to do is open up your podcast app and tap.
And if you found this episode helpful, please do us a favour, share it with one or two colleagues that you know who would also benefit from listening in. That means that we can get the ideas and strategies to the people who would benefit from them most. All you've got to do is open your podcast app, hit the share button, and send a direct link by email, messenger, or however you normally like to communicate with your friends.
And that's all we've got time for today.
So we look forward to seeing you next time on School Behaviour Secrets.